This is a production of Cornell University.
An assembly meeting, April 28th, 2011.
The time is 4:47 and we're calling the April 28th student assembly meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll? Here. He is here. He'll be here in a second. He's here. He's not here anymore.
Ben.
What? What?
Christian wasn't going to be here. Christian wasn't going to be here.
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 Yep.
Here.
All right. I'm excused. All right.
I talked to her. I talked to her.
You're up, man. Great. Great.
Open microphone. If we have any members of the audience who would like to talk on anything that is not currently on the agenda, please feel free to come up to the open microphone table.
Okay.
And may you please state your name and year for the record. Thank you for that. Do we have any questions?
I'm not going to be there, but yes.
Gigi, do we have any questions for her?
Gigi.
All right. Do we have any other members of the audience who'd like to talk on an issue not currently on the agenda? So please feel free to come up to the open microphone.
Okay.
Seeing none, I'm going to move to close the open microphone session.
All right. Moving on to Resolution 85, Student Assembly Organization Review Committee. Mohit. Wolverjani. So this is new business. It's also a charter change, so we cannot vote on this today. We have to wait until next week to let it mature for a week. So... Representative Gulrajani, you have 4 minutes. Present your resolution. So can you repeat that, please?
So, second page, right at the bottom, in bullet point 2, above, right after point 4, you see where the calculation of the FAA is on this number, about 6 lines from the bottom.
Yeah.
It says the committee may further review all student assembly documents relating to the relevant organization.
Slow down. May further review
all student assembly documents.
All right.
I also just want to add that I took this to the FDR committee to add a little bit of debate about it initially. I think some of the committee was too sold on the idea, but after talking about it for a while, we really didn't make that kind of
decision. All right. Thank you, Mohit. So just also so the assembly knows, since this is still new business, we do not need to vote on this amendment. Just next week, If you want this amendment to appear on the docket, you have to submit a more updated version of the resolution. All right? All right, first on the speaker's list is Representative Scott.
I just have a question. How many actual complaints or like requests for investigation do you guys get this year? What's the process for going about that? And I mean, you guys could, like, if the DHL is going to move to this process in the future, how are you or the DGI officer, UDI or whatever, whichever position it is, depending on making this process more open and transparent to anyone else?
So that's what that is. How many requests for reviews have I got? I knew it was going to be as soon as I was in there, so I won't have that. Otherwise, I don't want to try. And where I'm going to do that is on that, what was the next part of your question, sorry?
So, what's the process for filing a complaint?
I didn't want to know if you notified me yet. And how are we going to make this more transparent? Something I haven't thought of, but we could probably talk about that in the issue. I wasn't under the impression that people would want to rat out the group, so I know they had to accept that, but I can work with everyone who's in charge
of the group. All right. Next on the speaker's list is Representative Bajaj.
Questions on the table?
Sure.
Okay, sure. So I was wondering my external committee and I got this sent to some changes. I wanted to ask the new chair what he thought of changes and if there's anything else he wanted to add to the amendment, if he's got any thoughts about how he wants the committee to run next year. If that's, if he does have an idea, then maybe integrating them into these amendments would be a good idea.
I'll sit down with Jeffrey over this week and maybe we can see the
I'll allow the question if you'd like to answer.
I think that the fact that there's a mandate now for three unsupervised engineers is a little excessive, just based on the fact that people on that side have other tax arrangements as well. So I think that's
maybe also, there's like a better goal, actual reward here, where for every semester you can get a new motivation, you might put one day. I don't think that's necessarily
All right. Are there any other questions for Mohit? Thank you. So we'll be voting on this next week.
Welcome.
Moving on to Resolution 86, urging the administration to hire an advisor to Hagen. All right. Moving on to Resolution 77, promoting accessibility in on-campus events. So if there are any community members who would also like to step forward, please do so.
Ulysses and I and Talia and Scott and just everyone here had a long conversation with the SASC and with Ari to discuss how we can actually make this resolution something that's both amenable to the student assembly, works for the office, and works for CUDA. And we came up with what you see before you now, which is a good deal different than what you originally saw, but also we feel effective in the goal that we are trying to do. So the major complaint last time was that adding another form to the process is just adding another way for groups to forget to fill something out and another way for groups to lose their funding. And so what we spoke to the office about on recommendation from the SASC, so this is actually, this idea was born from an SASC member, is to incorporate this list or these criteria into the actual online application form. No checklist, no yes, no button. Simply under the local events tab in the online application form, include right under the location bar a definition of accessibility, a link to the interactive map that SDS will put up live in about July of the accessible locations on campus, and a list of accessibility criteria that are framed as that are framed in a way that makes them seem as positive encouragement for groups to actually do these things. So what you see in front of you, there are some slight amendments I'd just like to offer in a little bit, but essentially what you see in front of you is what we came up with. And it's, yeah, so does anyone have any questions? Oh, should I just give you amendments now?
Yeah.
Okay.
That you can dine with you. Good.
All right, so the first one is that in the Be It Further Resolved clause, change the last two words to accessibility criteria. So that in the quotation marks, put accessibility criteria. So the last one, yeah. And then there is a slightly edited down accessibility criteria. I think the only ones that were changed were the first two. So the first one now read, okay, so instead of accessibility, also on the accessibility information sheet, which is your first sheet in the packet, I think. Instead of accessibility, whatever, it should say accessibility criteria now. And then the first one will say, I have contacted the Cornell ADA coordinator at accessibility@cornell.edu, the brief description, okay, et cetera. So we just added something more specifying the office, because it was a different office than we previously listed. So it's, I contacted the Cornell ADA coordinator at, et cetera. Right, I have contacted the Cornell ADA coordinator at accessibility@cornell.edu, et cetera, et cetera. ADA coordinator. And the second piece is, instead of whatever that second clause was, I edited it over, so I don't actually see it. It should say, I have included contact information of a group officer for questions regarding accessibility on publicity materials. And then in parentheses it says, example, disability access questions, contact, officer email.
All right, so, and this is, where is the second amendment?
That one goes right, so it overlaps whatever was that second clause under accessibility criteria. It just replaces that.
Okay.
I sent these to Ray. It's on the first sheet.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and vote on the resolution alone, and then we'll simply send
it to the next. Okay, yeah, that works. And I mean, this is only, you know, as you say in the resolution, this is just a model for the office. So, you know, we'll.
At this point, so what is actually going to go online is up to
the office.
Whatever assessment criteria you want to include, that's your call.
Okay.
But we are going to have to amend the accessibility information assessment criteria. So, is there any consent to changing the accessibility information assessment criteria in the first place of the call clause? Seeing none of the amendments passed.
And all you guys now.
All right.
Speaker's list. First of all, speakers, you need to mention. I just want to say, you know, great job, you guys. The changes were made, you know, based off of the feedback that we got last time. And, you know, I meant the terms that they last time, you know, were out there, you know. Did they just say they are part of the guidelines themselves, you know, and organizations have to fill this out that we would end up hurting organizations and students in the process because we have organizations, you know, not turning that form in the oversight. So I thought that this is a good way to raise awareness of opposition and make organizations and those people going on events, more aware of things that they can that should be doing this issue here. I just caution future residents, to not take this document here and use this to then try to go back to what what was introduced a few weeks ago. People say, well, now that we have this in here, let's try to put some teeth in the trouble. But yes, a good job, good work.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. Do you have your hand up for a second?
Did you write anybody?
If there are any community members also who would like to speak on the issue, please raise your hand.
Come on, you know you want to.
Yeah,
introduce yourself.
Hi, everybody. My name is Eric Semper-Chase, and I actually am a staff member here at Cornell. I work in the Iowa School as part of the Extension and Division in the Employment and Disability Institute. I also advise CUDA, and I've advised CUDA since it was born, like 6 years ago. So I just want to say that I'm really happy. I'm very proud of CUDA, that they really tried to give us a lot of thought and really work on this. And I just want to comment that in my, 6 years of advising this organization, I've seen a lot of things come from the students. This resolution, as well as, you may not know this, but a lot of disability-focused courses are now being offered, including Introduction to Disability Studies, which I know some of you have taken, and I actually co-teach as well. All of these efforts have been driven by students, so I don't want any of you to ever underestimate the power that you guys have to make some real changes on this campus. I know you know that because you're all political and you're all government. But, I found it interesting. A couple of weeks ago, you walked out that resolution. I don't know your language, but you passed whatever to really encourage the administration to work to make all the buildings accessible and all that. Obviously, everybody obviously understood the significance of that. But the reality is that's going to take a while, right? It's going to take a while. It's going to take money. It's going to take buy-in from the administration. But the fact, if you all pass a resolution like this today, you're really sending a message to the administration. You're sending a message to them that you as students recognize your responsibility also in making all these programs and activities accessible. And when you send a strong message like that, you take responsibility, then you're really actually setting a good example for the administration. It's going to be a lot harder for them to say no to things when you guys are the ones modeling good, inclusive behavior. So I just want to thank you all for that.
Thank you.
Good job.
Good job.
All right.
I know. Good job. All right. How y'all doing? So here's the deal. So Haven has been effectively without an advisor for at least 2 years now. So here's how this happened. A couple years ago, we had this huge financial crisis. The administration had a hiring freeze. What happened was the whole LGBT structure on campus was being shifted around a little bit. And the way the current structure is, there's an LGBT resource center, which is led by the director, who's also the associate dean of, I'm not sure the exact title, but it's basically an associate dean position to lead that resource center. The thing is, in his job description, so that's currently held by Matt Carcella. In Matt Carcella's job description, there is no mention of advising Haven. There is a second job that is currently unfilled, who in their job description, 40% of their time is supposed to be devoted to advising Haven. That person currently doesn't exist, and so Haven is effectively without an advisor. Matt Carcella has been pulling extra time in order to help Haven along, but he can only divide his time in so many ways, given his responsibilities to the administration, his responsibilities to the resource center, his other responsibilities to, you know, random panels that are created, and committees that are created by the administration to deal with certain issues. And so right now what we're dealing with is a Byline-funded organization that receives quite a lot of money and is quite successful in spending their money, but has no administrative support in the form of an advisor. And while they've been doing a great job so far, the last thing we want is for, you know, them to fall off the face of the earth because they just haven't had support and they haven't had adequate leadership development and they haven't had, you know, that oversight that ensures a great group. So I kind of just wanted to bring this to the Assembly's attention, especially now that we're kind of emerging from the financial crisis. I don't really want to vote on this today, but I do hope that we can have some discussion on what we feel the administration's responsibility to Byline-funded groups is in this type of circumstance. You speaking to the mic? This sound.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. My question as far as hiring somebody, are you saying externally looking for somebody in or somebody that already works here and kind of giving them that designation? You know, do you don't want somebody to stretch thin or what?
Right, so it used to be that there was Matt Carcella, who's the director of the LGBT Resource Center, and then there were two part-time staffers who had other responsibilities in the university and split their time, or supposed to split their time. So 20%, I think one was David Bell, the other one was Jared Cruz, and they were supposed to devote 20% of their time each to advising Haven to make that 40% that this full-time position is supposed to have. The problem is, they already had full-time responsibilities to organizations like class councils and the Greek community and the other. So while it's great to have any amount of additional support for Haven and an advisor, what they really do need is a second full-time position in this area. A second full-time position under the Resource Center, a single full-time position for this advisor position. It's not even like that, because I believe under Laura Weiss's job, and I haven't seen Laura Weiss's job description, but I believe under her job description it includes advise the Women's Resource, like the Women's Resource Center is a Byline-funded group and an administrative piece, and I believe under her job description that's included. Matt Carcella, the director of the LGBT Resource Center, does not have advise Haven under his responsibilities in his job description. No one on this campus who currently works here has that responsibility. And the administration hasn't filled the only position that does have that responsibility.
From a traditional standpoint, I think that the Board of Regents, if you've been college-related for 8 years, then they have a kind of a 8 years
Yeah, sure. So part of it is I spoke about this with Haven in the LGBT Resource Center before I actually wrote the resolution. I wrote the resolution based on the parameters that I was given, but I do want to have another discussion with Haven, with Matt Carcella about this to make sure that you know I'm going about this the right way, that they you know see eye to eye on this. So I kind of just wanted to bring this. I also you know I think the conversation is worth having. You know, more than just a 10-minute discussion. And so, you know, that's the only reason. One other thing which I think Representative Jenkins mentioned, which I didn't address, is it doesn't necessarily... I'm not asking for this to be an external hire versus an internal hire. I think if they can find someone who they can... on this campus who's in a position that they don't necessarily need someone in that position anymore and they can move them into this position and are qualified, that's a big qualifier. But if they're qualified for this position... that's fine too. I just think that this position does need to be filled.
Have you talked to any other administrators about this? Because I think that the things that are hiring free, we have the
So in terms of the financials, I definitely don't know 100% if they are there, and I don't know if I would completely trust you know what they say anyway in that regard. What I will say is that this issue has been around since I've been the LGBT rep, and I have had a discussion about the lack of administrative support for Haven and for the Resource Center with Dean Hubble. I believe I may have brought this up as a question to President Skorin and Vice President Murphy when they were here once. You know, I've brought up the issue of the lack of proper staffing and the lack of adequate qualified staffing for the Resource Center and for Haven. So, you know, this shouldn't be coming out of the blue for them. They should know that we have been looking at this and been thinking about this and been concerned by this for a while. But since my private discussions haven't borne fruit yet, I would like to have the SA, and because this is a sense of the body, the community behind something like this. I can't think of a group that doesn't have. Yeah, I mean, I'll yield to Vice President Nicoletti on this one.
One of the core criteria for being a bond organization is that you have an advisor that is employed to have oversight of your account. So the fact that the community doesn't have an advisor actually disqualifies it, quote unquote, to be a bond.
Right. So they do have. And they do have an advisor, per se, right? So Matt Carcella is serving in that capacity, but he shouldn't be, according to his job description and the other job description that the university has out there.
Now, the other one is my advisor, and talking
about the advisor. No. I mean, Matt Carcella may have people in mind that he's interacted with at this university, or there may be people externally that we'd want to bring in. But I think that the fact that there isn't even the process hasn't even started to find that and to figure that out is troubling.
All right. Next we see Representative
Design. So, I mean, I definitely think that this is something that should happen in an idealistic, perfect university. Instead, I think we have this resolution. We're going to get an email response from President Ford saying thank you for pointing out this tough issue to me, and the administration will be sure to tackle it in the near future. And, you know, 4 years from now, I know you represent the exact same thing exactly where you're sitting, and nothing will happen. I think that, like, practically, we need to go about a better way of doing this. Let's talk to both Patricia and Matt about this, and, like, you know, this kind of issue of when anything comes up as a minority or the international community, you need to get sent to them and they get asked to do something that they're not required to do. That's really an issue. I think rather than asking the university to make another hire, which, you know, I think on a pretty feasible standpoint isn't going to happen, the better way to do this would be to try and expand the scope of Haven or the Haven support network beyond what it currently stands on campus. Maybe looking to see if you can find someone who has, you know, 20% of their time to dedicate is currently sitting in another office. I know that that's think Patricia's goal with the H3C is kind of what's going on in the Asian community. And I know that last year she's been pretty effective at that. I haven't seen the same outreach happen on Haven's behalf. I'm not saying it's your fault or Haven's, but you guys have had some things on your agenda. But in my opinion, like, that's what the next step needs to be.
Sure.
So I'm not going to vote no on this resolution because, you know, like, from a sense of the body standpoint, I think it should happen. But, you know, I hope that practically you realize the goal.
So Haven actually tried that exact model last year, and it didn't work at all. I mean, they had two people sitting in other desks on this university, at this university, who were devoting 20% of their time each to Haven, in addition to their other responsibilities, which took up 100% of their time. And Haven did fine, but it wasn't what Haven needs. It wasn't what any Vineland-funded organization should have. Do I expect the administration to see this resolution and be like, you're hired, right? No, obviously not. But I do think that by... Yeah, that was a Trump reference for all those. Okay, but I do think that by sending them things like this, they'll know that we're actually looking at this issue seriously, and that it's not just us, you know, talking to them on the side after meetings or in their office hours or whatever, but we actually care about this issue. And if they're not going to address it now, hopefully by the time, you know, my successor down the road, you know, in 4 years from now, hopefully they will have actually addressed it because they knew we were looking at this. So, you know, will it work now? Maybe not, but hopefully it has a long-term impact. And hopefully this tells the administration that they can't just keep rolling things onto the minority community's current administrators and, you know, not expect them to eventually buckle under all that work. So will it work perfectly? Maybe not, but I think it's still worth doing.
All right. So we have exhausted our first speakers list. We do have first and second speakers list. Is there anybody who hasn't spoken yet who would like to speak?
All right. Yeah. Actually, I have a question about
what?
I have a question about how structure is going to be like the university, and you said there's a university component of that as well.
Sure.
So it's Haven or the resource center and that. I mean, I don't know if that's
what you mean. Sure. This is actually my favorite topic. okay, so the way the LGBTQ community is structured on campus, there is the academic side, which is, you know, they have courses on these topics. There's the social aspect, which is Haven and other LGBT organizations on campus, student organizations on campus. And then there's the administrative side, which is the LGBT Resource Center. The difference between the WRC and the LGBT Resource Center is that the WRC, I believe, it almost blurs the line between administrative and social. So Laura Weiss is both the head of the LGBT Resource Center, head of the Women's Resource Center, and advisor to the Women's Resource Center student organization, and I believe that that's in her job description. In terms of the academic, in terms of the administrative link to Haven, it does not come from the director of the LGBT Resource Center because he has other responsibilities that take up 100% of his time, but it comes from a second position which has its own job description, which lists 40% of its time to be devoted to advising Haven. And the issue is that Matt Carcella has been basically putting in 150% of time in order to advise Haven, in order to sit on these committees that he's expected to be on for the administration to deal with certain issues, and he's doing his job. And so if there's this other position that's supposed to be filled, that's supposed to advise Haven, you know, shouldn't that be filled in order to deal with this? I think so. I think Haven thinks so. And, you know, it seems like Vice President Nicoletti agrees that, you know, a Vineland-funded organization having an advisor is a crucial element to their existence as a Vineland-funded organization in the short and long term. And so that's why I'm bringing this up.
All right. And are there any other questions? Are there any questions
for you?
We will end debate on this
86. Thank you.
After we wait for President Gordon, we will move to Resolution 79. President Gordon will be here in about 5 minutes, and I hope that is yes, they can put away the computer.
Gordon just emailed me like 2 minutes ago. Oh, pretty cool.
probably at his desk though. I don't know. Okay. So first the formalities. I think everyone except for Encore and Asa got the new 79. You guys look on the person next to you. And let me just make the motion. So motion to amend the R79 you have before you. And in the resolution, I'd like to have everything that says Student Bill of Rights changed to Statement of Student Rights and Responsibilities. So that includes the title, that includes all the resolve clauses. And, you know, in changing the title, we're also changing the document to the one you guys have before you. So that's the amendment, and I'm about to make a small amendment to the document itself. So.
All right, that's the first amendment.
Right.
Is there any dissent to that amendment? Seeing none, amendment is approved.
Okay, and the other amendment is, it's really not a source of debate, just someone emailed me with some advice for language. So if you look to Article 2, publication, instead of after students have the responsibility to be governed by the canons of responsible journalism and existing laws governing communication and electronic media, period, students are also expected to act in a manner that does not blah blah blah. So that's Article 2, publication. Really, it's not in the document you have before you. I will send you this right now. But pretty much, that's just to say, you also have to obey the law. That's the responsibility. You know. Okay, Article 2, publication. It says students, in turn, it says students have the responsibility to be governed by the canons of responsible journalism, and this is new, existing laws governing communication and electronic media, period. Students are also expected, and then it goes, to act in a manner, and then the rest of it. And the, so you have that? That's the amendment. It's just to say, like, you can't hand out, you know, pornography, you know, yeah, against the law, whatever.
So, is there any dissent to that?
Yeah.
Seeing none, that amendment is approved. You can dissent once we're done with this.
Right. Yeah, no problem. And the other amendment is just, if you go to Article 10, discrimination and harassment, I figured it was, you know, a little too much language, so after veteran status, in the second paragraph, when it says students shall not be harassed, after veteran status, a period, we'll strike out when these behaviors, blah, 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 and the next sentence is students. So, just because, you know, saying you can't harass and then referring to the harassment policy is enough. We don't have to get too legalistic with it. So I'm striking half a sentence. Okay.
All right, is there any objections to that?
Resolution time. Okay. Right, so based on the panel discussion, it seemed as though, you know, I was really looking to advice from administrators, and both Dean Hubble and Dean Fry, as well as some of you, some people in the University Assembly, think that responsibilities, and I agree, should be a part of any statement of students' rights. So that's the biggest change we have in this document. And I also tried to follow the wisdom of some of those panel members, the lawyers and the academics, in trying to not get too legalistic with the language, but to make it clear the extent of our rights at the same time, and to reference some Cornell policies to make it clear that this document doesn't seek to enumerate policies, it just seeks to educate members of the community, and that's the real purpose of the resolution. And I know I sent it out this morning, so this, some of you, this might be the first time you're reading it, so feel free to ask questions.
I'm going to go ahead and ask the first question.
Great.
So I know that this ratification is a critical issue for the company, but well, actually, I'm a lot of my question. So, come to the next question.
So, if there, as we move with the ZA here to kind of talk about how this kind of works, how this works, so what, I guess, what way can we ensure that we still here, so that it's not presented to students,
I made sure in the introduction to say that, you know, this is not the list of your rights and responsibilities. This isn't like everything there is, that there's other documents that this document has to reference, including the campus code of conduct. And I think what we got out of the discussion with the associate administrator, judicial administrator, was that any new laws governing students and the community members in general, because the campus code doesn't just cover students, it covers everybody, they have to go in the campus code. So the judicial administrator, when making a decision, you know, is not going to reference this document. However, my vision for this document is that students who come here and have no idea what their rights are and would like to know what their responsibilities are have an easy document to look at. They're not going to go through the campus code. No one I know has come here and just looked at 42 pages of the campus code of conduct. But this is something we could put on their beds and they could come here having a greater understanding of how to exercise their responsibilities. Well,
sorry to be late. Thank you. Always a pleasure. Or mostly a pleasure. Great. I just wanted to mention one thing and give you credit for it, Vince. We have periodic meetings of student leaders, and Kent and Vince will help me make sure I don't forget. We have the SA president, the GPSA president. You came, I think, as a trustee. ASA comes as a trustee. We have the three representatives of the Greek system, if I recall correctly. And the son, and one other person maybe? Or perhaps that's it. Okay. And we've been doing this for
a couple of years.
Three and a half, maybe 4 years, periodically. And the way we have generally used the meeting is that I respond to questions and issues that the student leaders bring up. And Vince suggested at the last meeting, given ongoing interest and concern about making sure that the students are aware of issues that I or Dr. Murphy, Dr. Hubble anticipate coming up, that we could, Vince's suggestion was that we could use that meeting not only for me to react and Dr. Murphy and Dr. Hubble to react to questions from the students, but to keep the students apprised of things that we believe are coming up. I thought it was a very good idea, and we're going to institute that as soon as we start to have our next meeting. And I did check with Dr. Murphy. She was very, very positive about it. So I hope that that will help the communication in the other direction as well. Well, it was because of you, so I'm thanking you. And that's it, and I'm ready to take questions.
Thank you.
Yep.
So first, the
advantage. Yes, so I guess...
Also, before you start, if there are any members of the community who would like to also ask a question, we'll have our parliamentarian come around and take your name, and I'll call you.
Matt, is this something new?
A little bit new.
Oh, really? I haven't seen you in a while, so.
I guess my question is kind of based on some things I've actually had conversations with you and with Dean Hubble about, and with Vice President Murphy, I'm sure, as well. I guess the multicultural community on campus, whether it be LGBT community, the women's community, the Asian community, et cetera, have had a lot of trouble, I guess, with the administration, not just in terms of information, we have all these other things that have been coming up, but just in terms of administrative support. One example that we were discussing almost right before you walked in was the lack of the filling of a position under the LGBT Resource Center, whose job is to advise Asian LGBTQ students. That position has gone unfilled for 2 years. And it doesn't only come on the hiring aspect, but also in the just administrative support vocal. We had the resolution against LGBT bullying on campus. And while there was a nice article in the Sun that you wrote about civility, it didn't actually touch on the pulse of this university and the pulse of the nation at the time, which was specifically, hate crime, not civility that is, in rational political debate, but hate crimes where it's not always
an answered question.
So I'm wondering, are there plans to move administrative support from passive role to more active role for these communities?
I guess there's really two aspects of it. One, I'm disappointed, not arguing with you, but I'm disappointed to hear that the perception, your perception, I'm sure others, is that I think what you said is had trouble with the administration, I think that's the phrase you used. And so if somehow the administration, since I've been president, has given you trouble about being responsive to concerns, I apologize. I'm very, very much in support of making progress in these areas. The second issue really is, are we going to do something in a more active role? I'm going to defer in a minute to Dean Hubble to make whatever comments he wishes. I actually believe that the offices that are trying to be responsive to this have been much more than passive, much more than passive. And part of the issue the last 2.5 years has been the severity of the downturn in the campus. Now, that doesn't mean that we roll over and die and can't do things that need to be done on campus. It doesn't. It doesn't. But I just want to remind everyone, and I don't mean this in a preachy way, but just to remind you about the severity of the changes and actions that we've taken. The staff workforce of the university, which is the population you're talking about, is down 9%, 9% from where it was when you started at Cornell. And so I believe that the people in various administrative positions responsible, not just administratively, but emotionally, to really be responsive and to be perceived as responsive, eat, live, and breathe these concerns and wake up every day and think about it. But I think it's fair to say that we haven't made the progress that a lot of us wish we could have made. And once again, I want to make sure that the reality and the perception is not that we're giving you trouble about the multicultural issues. They're very, very important to me. Do you want to add anything about the specifics?
Well, Matt, I certainly appreciate what you're saying. And, Matt Carcella has been terrific. He's been here now, almost 3 years. I realize that he's shorthanded, and there was a position there that had to go away as part of the downsizing of the last several years. But on the flip side, we now have 626 in the process of being created, which will provide the LGBT Resource Center with new facilities that are much more generous in terms of the total square feet, and will provide some administrative support, although you wouldn't want to argue that it's adequate. It will be staff support because of the co-location of all the organizations at 2626. So I'm sympathetic. I think we're trying as hard as we can to get our resources.
When you get to that age that you are, it happens.
And this is
something.
We had a earlier we were
If it's acceptable to you and to Vince, what I'd like to do, since you have another meeting coming up, let me get a report to you, a specific summary of what's going on. All of the capital projects done in the university, including the ones in New York City, the ones done in the contract college areas, and the ones in the rest of the campus, are laid out in an annual capital development plan. And I should be able to give you not just generalities, but specifics about what's going on. So if it's acceptable for me to give you that rather than trying to answer it now, since you have one more meeting, I'll ask you, Kent, if you could talk to Q Wong,
yep,
the VP for Facility Services, and we'll get you a quantitative answer, perhaps with a list of the projects. I have cut the capital expenditures more than any other area for those that would be based on taking more debt on the university based on bonded indebtedness, that is selling tax-exempt bonds. Some of these projects and maintenance, upgrade and upkeep of the university and improvements in areas like you're talking about, as well as in sustainability, are still in the budget. Most of what's being spent is in that general area of maintenance and upgrade the facilities. So we'll get that to you. And when is the next meeting, Vince? The last meeting? Yikes. Okay. Okay. We'll try to see if we can talk to him tomorrow and get it. I'm going to be attending the medical school commencement in Doha. So I want well, let's do the best we can to get information to you through the SA, and maybe we can get it to you Monday or Tuesday, and you can use it as you see fit. Good. Thank you. Make a couple comments and then ask if Kent wants to add something as well. I know, as you do, that there's a faculty group looking at the academic calendar. I know, as you do, that there's a faculty group doing an extensive review of the academic calendar. I don't actually know if they're talking specifically about the date of ad drop for classes in that academic calendar review. And I'm not sure if Kent knows, but we can find out. My own experience has been that it depends a lot on the individual student and what the course of study is and how much the student came into the university with a sure or an uncertain view of what his or her major would be. For example, when I was in college, I was undecided until I was a junior. And in fact, Northwestern had a formal major called undecided, which we were proud of, you know, it was like a group thing that we were undecided. I thought it was important for us to have more flexibility But I wouldn't make a blanket statement across all students. So I think it depends on what the major. Do you happen to know whether that faculty group are looking at this?
We've discussed it, but I think the group that has spent more time with it is the associate deans. And they have taken up the discussion. And what they've decided to do, and I think it's largely done, is to make the drop-out dates consistent across all colleges, so that if you're taking a course out of your own college, it's not going to be a different drop-out date than the college that you're a part of more generally. My personal opinion is that we should try to be as flexible as we can, but of course there are practical issues that need to be taken into account when it comes to class enrollment. So, you know, I guess we need to sort of fuel middle path through the needs of the students and also the practical requirements of trying to keep courses going in a way that's orderly.
And if it doesn't happen, write me directly at david.skorton with however you meant to say it. Or, good. Actually, get a little closer to it would be better. Yeah. Thank you. That's great. Perfect.
So thanks again for coming in today. So I have two quick questions. One's a really quick one on being part of the long response. So first question, I don't think that you've seen some of the trustee debates, the trustee campaign for undergraduate trustees. One of their clients, the platform, is to increase the number of undergraduates on the board of trustees. I wanted to hear your opinion on that, given that it could make it fairer for students in even number of years. My second question is, one of the biggest hot buzzwords about the administration, the place of the administration, in fact, communication of your decisions to the students that you're respected. We've heard most recently that you decided to, using the committee as kind of a guinea pig scenario where you're trying to make decisions and let them know the information beforehand. But I was wondering, as you increased communication transparency, I was wondering if, given that you've tried meetings and committees and office hours in the past before, if your office or anyone that works for the administration has thought of innovative or new ideas to relay information such that the students that are affected are made aware or notified or involved in the process more so in the meetings and that's it.
No, it's good. It's good. On the first question, thank you for these questions. On the first one about how the students themselves want to handle election of student trustees, I think it's your issue. And it would, speaking of decision making, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to tell you how to handle that decision. I'm proud of the fact that we have student elected trustees who vote, and a lot of campuses don't have that, as you're probably aware. So I think you should do what you believe is right, and I'll stand behind how the students think it should be done. On the latter issue of transparency, first of all, I want to say that in the area of financial transparency and transparency of the strategic plan, the two most major things that I think have happened in my administration, I'm going to say a strong statement. I think that we've reached a new level of transparency more than anything that's come before, and I guess I would stick by that. There's more financial information coming. The trustees, every single month, I think our trustees would agree, get a full accounting of everything that's going on, more than I think they ever have before. That doesn't mean it's enough, but I think we're going in the right direction. The idea of this other group that you called a guinea pig group, which I love that, because of what it says about the students, but I just want to remind you, this is an idea that I'm being responsive to that came from a student leader. I'm willing to consider almost any idea the students can come up with about ways to engage students more. I want to stick with the open student office hours. I think we're having one actually tomorrow, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, tomorrow afternoon. Coming here, I think, is important. Student leaders are meetings are important. Open forums, when you all think they're important, other student groups are important. I'll be almost certainly responsive to any reasonable idea. And when I say reasonable, just something that I can fit into my schedule as it is. And beyond that, I think it's the dialogue itself that will result in the better changes. So it's a very important question.
And President, I was actually going to thank you exactly with your efforts, exactly with your transparency issue. I know that we have already one meeting with Vice President Murphy regarding transparency. We're having another one next week to come up with some creative ideas. So I'd also challenge you, Representative Judge, give your ideas on how you'd like President Swarton to better train, just talking and get the students to please let us know. And I would actually like to thank you again, President Swarton, for really responding to
our
request for transparency. Next on the speaker's list is community member Daniel Trevite. Come on up.
Yes, come
to the mic. Take the microphone and I'm going to say your name here for the record.
Hi guys, I'm Nate. Oh. Recording, definitely. I'm Nate Trefison, and I'm next year's LGBTQ rep on the SA.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I guess my question is, throughout my time here, I've noticed a lack of kind of the same standards of diversity in the LGBT community compared to the rest of other minorities, especially in terms of recruitment, in terms of getting into Cornell. And I was wondering what you thought about the possibility of putting sexual orientation on the application to getting in. I know there's a lot of sides on that, but this is something that I was really thinking of taking up.
Thank you. So you have to remind me about this. I'm sorry. It's something I don't deal with. Most of the students coming here are using the Common App. Is that right?
That's right.
So it would have to be a change in the Common Application, I guess, if I'm hearing it right. So I don't really know. I'll look into it. I will, through Kent and through Barb New from the admissions office. The idea of listing those sexual orientation as a dimension of a goal for diversity is already out there. But you're talking about a practical way to implement it.
Yeah.
So it's a very important question. And let me think about how I'm going to get back to you, because I'll be out of town through Thursday of next week. But if you can help me.
Sure.
And then can you leave me, either write me an email or something,
yeah,
so I have how to get back to you.
Yeah.
And congratulations on your new position.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Nice to meet you.
Me too.
I've noticed that the admissions rate this year has gone down as far as the number of students that were accepted, and I was wondering if that's a reflection of just a more competitive applicant pool, or if that's more or less a reflection of the strength for contract colleges such as IOR, CALS, UMAC. Just wondering if that was any reflection of those budget cuts, or if it was just a competitive applicant pool.
So I'm sorry, I got the second part of it, but not the first part. What's the statistic you're citing?
Oh, just that the number of admissions gone down, the overall percentage.
The acceptance rate's gone down. Okay, that's just a reflection. The size of the student body hasn't changed hasn't gone down because of the budgetary issues. In fact, I think, I don't want to get this wrong, but I think it's up a tiny bit from what it was 3 years ago, like 82 or 100 or something like that in the freshman class. Is that about right?
I think that's right.
It's something like that. I think that's a reflection of a few more applications and the same number of seats into which to apply. I don't think it's related to other issues. One issue that some of you have raised before, and I can't remember, Andrew, if it was you or who it was raised, is that our rate of increase of applications was not as great this last year as it was in years before. It still was a record year for us, still the highest applications in the Ivy League. And I think that just slight increase, 1% or whatever it was responsible for that almost equivalent reciprocal decrease in acceptance rate.
Okay. Well, predicated my question was that I was informed that the number of transfers that were accepted this year had decreased. I think just looking toward that was just,
I actually don't know the answer to that. And
I'm not sure I do either, but let me tell you this, that I just left a meeting where we talked about transfer students and the support of transfer students, both in the classroom and out of the classroom. And as you know, many of the colleges consider transfer students a very, very important part of their student body and would seek to increase their numbers. So I'm speculating here, but I would think that in years to come you'll see more transfer students on campus rather than less.
Thank you. Great. And then we have time for one more question, and that will be for Vice President Gilbert.
Just following up on the meeting from a couple of weeks ago about the rich barriers, I was wondering what, for example, what the NSAS committee needs to look at the pre-schematic that we presented sort of our thoughts to President Scorton and Patrick Murphy, and which were very much aligned our thoughts with the administration. So I was wondering where you are in the decision process for presenting your final thoughts to the
Right. We're still waiting for some more design data to come to us, and this month coming up is a month where we have to make a final decision on this. So we're still working on it, still getting some input. When I'm back for the commencement trip to Doha on Thursday of next week, I'll be back Thursday night, and we'll probably in the week after that make major progress on trying to decide. That meeting that we had was very, very useful, not just because mainly there was alignment, which was very, very gratifying, but because you had thought about it carefully and reviewed each of the documents, and that gives me a little bit more confidence that the general direction we're going is a direction that's supported by at least some students who are knowledgeable about it. So it was very, very helpful. If you don't hear anything from me and others by the end of the week of the 9th, or even the middle of the week of the 9th, you could write me an email and check to see where that's at. Yeah, I think that's the right week.
From that meeting itself, I think the issues we would like to see is an announcement of what the rich barriers may look like next year before students to the campus. I know it's preferably before the end of class, because that may not be possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it won't be before the classes are over, because isn't the 6th the last? Yeah, but it'll be sometime in the month of May. We'll have to keep in touch about that. Before you throw me out, do we?
It's 2 minutes out.
Okay. Well, if there is one, let's take it. Then I have just one more thing to say at the end. I hear you.
Our summer question is in regards to health and spending on that, and kind of how we can think. I know we talked more back and forth with the trustee debate about, making sure that the administration, provides more money for services, but I think you should go, I kind of want to go a step further. Where does that money go to specifically? What services do you think that how are we making sure that things don't just look top down, like the university is pushing money so we can deal with the issue? And also, how do we make sure that those services are really reviewed and need to get to? Because a lot of money that's going up issues are very taboo.
Yeah, these are very, very important and cogent points that you're making. There's nothing about this that's top down. The money that's being put in is not enough, but it's been driven by the demand. The 10 years before I became president, the 10 years before, Gannett a little more than doubled the number of mental health professionals, and we've upped it quite a bit since then. We're out trying to raise additional funds besides reallocation of monies in the university, philanthropic funds. You may remember the Appel family who built Appel Commons supported some additional funding specifically for mental health services at Gannett, and also supported the Jazz and Lincoln Center Orchestra benefit concert last year for that reason. So we're moving full speed ahead on trying to raise even more. Last year, when we had these very, very difficult and tragic events, I put out as much information as I could to encourage people to overcome the stigma, just the point you're making, and have the courage to come out and ask for help. I told a little bit about my own story when counseling helped me a lot, when I had a bad illness in my family, it caused me some problems when I was a college student. And the response, I'm not saying the response to my statement, but the response in general was another big uptick in the demand for services. So it's really bottoms up in that sense that people are asking for. That's just a raw amount of service. The other question you're asking, which is very critical, is exactly where it goes and whether all communities of need are having their needs met. And for sure they're not. For sure they're not. And we know they're not. And Dr. Janet Corson-Reichert, who runs Gannett, and Dr. Murphy, Dr. Hubble, I don't imagine there's a bigger issue on their minds than the specific second thing you asked, and that is to make sure that there's as optimal as possible a match between the specific needs and where those services are going. If you have, you specifically, Representative Chauncey, or any others, have specific examples of where maybe it's going to X, but it ought to go to Y, not to take it away from X, but whatever, write them directly to me. Yeah, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure Janet has something that gives you a general outline of where the money's going.
And maybe I could ask one more thing, if this would be helpful, is not only a snapshot now, perhaps she could give some trend information on how the money has changed maybe during the last 3, 4, 5 years, whatever she can lay her hands on. Would that be acceptable?
Sure.
Because I think it's a very important question.
So, Chauncey, you want me to send it to you?
Okay. A quick thing before I run. I know I owe some emails to a couple of people around here, Ray and others. I apologize. It's because of my travel. This is the busiest time of the year. I'm not trying to blow you off or ignore you, as much fun as that might be. So I will be back with you. In the one that I got from you, I'm checking on some ideas about that you asked me. And I got one from you for an issue that didn't come up today after all, but I appreciated it and began to look into it. So be patient with me. This is the very busiest time of the year, and I'll be back with you, mindful of the fact that the last day is next Friday. I'll be back here on campus then. So hopefully I can get some of that done even while I'm traveling. So thanks, everybody, and I look forward to catching you.
Sure.
Are there
any suggestions you'd like to make for how things run this year? How many perspective?
I took a look back there just now, and the look I got in return, I'm not sure they think I could share any wisdom with them, but that's all right. It's cool. Here's what I would say. We talked somewhat earlier in the year, you and I, or perhaps it was at an SA meeting, about how much it would help me to be able to get an early warning of things that are coming so I can educate myself better. The note you sent me was a good example of that. And so the student leader meetings would be one example of that where we can, not only could I share with you things that are on my mind, but you can as well. And to whatever extent you're comfortable letting me take a look, and Dr. Murphy, Dr. Hubble, at sort of the insider's agenda, what sort of things you think might be happening that we can begin to get ourselves up to speed, that would really be helpful. Just because of the time constraints and other demands on my time, that would be good. Otherwise, I think you do a very, very strong job, you personally and the whole group, and it's critical that we keep talking to each other. It's not critical we always agree about everything, but critical that we keep talking about it. So thank you very much, and hope you have a good afternoon. Thank you. Is that the one you were talking about?
Yeah. I didn't know you went to Northwestern. I modeled the state of student rights a little bit after the one
really?
There.
Yeah, I was a transfer student. I went to UCLA for 1 year. Oh, really? That was 1 year at UCLA and 2.5 years.
See you later.
Okay. All right, and we're back.
Okay, the next person on the speaker's list is Representative Bruce. Yes, if you don't mind, continue to.
The question I had before was,
It was about libel, right? Okay. So, yeah, I did think about putting something in there about libelous speech, but I feel like the responsibility mentioned here, students have the responsibility to be governed by the canons of responsible journalism and to act in a manner that, well, that, this is the old one, act in a manner that does not interfere with the rights of others or disrupt the regular and essential operation of the institution. I feel like libelous speech interferes with the rights of others. And so I do think that responsibility is covered without getting too legalistic with the document. Yeah.
It just is one thing that's been stuck out with defamatory remarks. I don't know if that's necessarily something that can imply or an education or something that we're starting to concern with.
If you know, in between this week and next week, if you want to work out some language with me, I'd be more than happy to work with you.
Okay.
Next, I'm speaking
with Mr. Representative Gar. I can hear you. Earlier on, based off of the panel.
Well, looking through it, I mean, the responsibilities thing was a big thing because that affected most every article except for maybe some things with due processes that really are just rights without responsibilities, but most of them have a responsibility attached to it now. So most of them are changed, and the introduction has changed. No longer is it that grandiose kind of preamble that it was before. Now it's giving students a clear, you know, explanation of what this document is when they look at it. We're not going to make this something it's not. Look at this. This is all your policies. This is all your rights. It's a living, breathing document that we could amend, and it's also just really meant for the purposes of education, and I'm just looking through it now. Like, for example, Professor Lance Compa, when the lawyers told us about how, you know, the 24-hour privacy rule and the language of probable cause, that's up to, you know, judicial interpretations, or that calls for other questions. So I did try to simplify the language so that it wasn't contradiction or it wasn't new toward the campus code or existing policies. But it still gave you the right information. I like the thought, though.
Thank you. I mentioned the other day when you had your discussion, but first of all, who believes the document, so to speak? I mean, you're setting all these things out, it's supposed to go, and then all the other rules and everything.
Right.
Kick in on her, it's supposed to be like step three, then they'll, you know, write section two, finally.
Yeah, I don't, because the judicial administrator, here's the thing, the judicial administrator, which is, you know, they adjudicate all the decisions with campus rights and student rights, they are limited to the campus code of conduct. And some of those panel members did say, hey, why not include these Bill of Rights in the campus code of conduct? And the reason I didn't take that approach, which if anyone who's serving on the university assembly as well wants to try to do, I mean, by all means, but the reason I didn't take the approach was because I feel like if you put in the campus code of conduct, that affects all people, all community members. And this is really meant to have a limited, manageable scope to students, to inform students. So I feel like, this won't be something the judicial administrator looks to as a policy to enforce because they're limited to the campus code. But at the same time, this is the only way that we can make a manageable document for students. You can't put it in the code.
So just a quick question. Just wonder if there's another document for students to see, because I know, especially in the wild, there's a whole lot of books, like yellow books, and other rules for red and the so is this just going to be one more document that students are going to receive, or are you expecting to get a taste of that?
I don't really, you know, maybe as a transfer they didn't give me as much documents, but I don't really recall that sort of information. Perhaps Dean Hubbell, would this be a do you think this kind of statement of rights and responsibilities would replace any existing information that students currently get, or it would just be additional information?
I would like to think that it would be succinct enough so that it would be sort of ubiquitous in the environment. It would be included in some of the things that we would hand out. But, you know, clearly, if it got to that, you know, it would have to be vetted, as you know, all over the university.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally speaking, I see it as a very succinct set of...
3 pages, would you say?
Whatever, as short as you could compress it.
Yeah.
So it would be memorable, it would be an easy reference.
That's sort of a problem for another question that you guys. Is this automatic in terms of what you wrote, since we have whatever legislative focus or whatever section might automatically put in, or I assume this is going to be better by why you want to be
so? So the document specifically says that it has to be vetted by another assembly, so technically, would it go into effect? From my reading of the document, technically we do have legislative oversight of both the dean of student office and campus council. So it can't apply that technically. But I don't know exactly how this would play out in that legislative framework, but I would say that we could technically have this document for the dean of student office alone, but technically other wouldn't have to
involve.
So the JAA,
wouldn't
have to
have to
wouldn't necessarily
have to have. So that's sort of rotating that account. I guess all my questions on this. I guess my main point is that, I would hope this document, that's an example, sort of communicate with the present document that it's received as well as other regulations and laws at the university. So as much as, you know, you don't want to put this out here and say, okay, this is even the right thing. Have a need, you know, to seek these rights and or to respond to them. So I would hope whatever it is that we discuss it, sort of look into that and how it will play in there.
Right. And if people have ideas about new language, I'd certainly like the week to work with them.
Yes, so we may not vote. It is perfectly fine to have a healthy debate with this resolution and we can agree to the next meeting. Next, Representative Smith.
Yep, you're right.
Now there are many times, even though we are notified, you're getting
submit your request to appear, and they can be in charge with the level of requests, something like that. But if it comes up and you're hearing that there's alcohol, the warden will be charging you with license, and you can charge you with it. I'm talking about the whole record of the CAA, because you know, so they didn't have that.
Okay, so I think your question is specifically about the right to privacy. So believe it or not, to the best of my knowledge, it is the housing contracts policy that RAs can't just go into rooms and unreasonably search them. I've been given anecdotes from the judicial administrator that, you know, one time around Slope Day, one of the RAs said, I know these kids have liquor in there, I'm going to go in and get it. And he went into the rooms and got in, and the JA threw it out because it was against our policies. So if you look at the language of the privacy article, Article 4, which is now shortened, I know that nothing in there is contrary to present policy. However, how many students really know the extent of their rights? And that's not, you know, privacy is one thing. Do you know that you have a right to not share your academic records, that no one can, your parents can't just call up and get your academic records? Most students don't know that. So the point of this resolution is really just to, in a condensed way, give students the knowledge they need to act responsibly and to develop as citizens of the Cornell community.
So I like a couple of things you said earlier when you're talking about freshmen coming here. No one's really going to sit down and read the answer. I agree with that. And I think that maybe the only time you're going to read the answer is if you get the word. But I don't think you should go about wrong with the Bill of Rights. I think that
it's a statement of rights.
A statement of rights. I don't think you can call it a statement of rights. We're not really declaring something new here. I think it's just an abbreviated version of rights that are already given to numerous students. So I don't know. I think we should try to get away from the grandiose language. I don't want this to be an article in the Sun tomorrow saying the student assembly has a bill of rights for students, and that's really not.
That was last week's article. Which language are you referring to? The title.
Yes. I'd like to change the title to a Apocryphal Code of Reader's Guide version, because I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Could you please read the amendment form and let that author respond?
Yeah.
So please, what is the amendment?
The amendment is the subject of the resolution to Pocket Guide and Campus Code of
Conduct. And is this also going to change the title of the entire document, or just the resolution?
I think that would change it everywhere that what is currently the title of this resolution.
A Pocket Guide to the
Pocket Guide and
Campus Code of Conduct. Campus Code
of Conduct. My pulse here.
We're starting a new speakers list.
A quick response.
And yes, so you have a response. So,
yeah, I mean, the first response is that Campus Code of Conduct, this is not a digest of the Campus Code of Conduct. As you heard last week from the Associate Judicial Administrator, the Campus Code of Conduct does not touch on anything academic. So when we have a section on academic freedom, that is nowhere in the Campus Code of Conduct. So this is not a digest of the Campus Code of Conduct. Furthermore, the title, Statement of Student Rights and Responsibilities. Believe it or not, I didn't make it up. This is something that exists in a lot of other schools, including President Scorin's alma mater, Northwestern University, which helped me craft the introduction to the document. So to say that this is not a Statement of Student Rights and Responsibilities is to really ignore everything that's in it. And furthermore, the fact that these documents are almost commonplace when you search them on the web at other universities.
Actually, I said,
Representative Danza. Actually, hold on. We have a second for our amendment.
Wah, wah.
Okay, we have a second. Representative. Yeah, I mean, this is if we're going to vote for the document, we're going to vote for the document and not for the title of this thing, because there's no bearing on whether or not we do. The song that comes with the title for it, unless it's like profane or completely wrong, which it's not, I think there's no reason to change the title. So it's not profane. I'm not offended by the title of the resolution or the title of the document. And so I would oppose the amendment and I call the question.
All right. The amendment has been drawn. That's 5 minutes. I won't get back.
So, please maintain your composure. We have 7 minutes and one assembly meeting left of the year. Let us go back to the original speaker's list. Remember, this speaker's list, we will work off this speaker's list first thing next meeting. So if you want to speak on this resolution as well next meeting, I suggest you get it on the calendar. This speaker's list is dead. Next is Representative Wong.
I'm sure, you know, that the latter part will be a debate that we will have, and I'll explain my thought process in doing that in a minute. And perhaps I could even be swayed from the way it is right now with a little debate. But as to the first thing about the right to information, the thought process was pretty much the fact that judicial administrator should have to publish the laws in which they go about prosecuting you for. You can't retroactively enforce a law or a code on students. So that was the thought process of the right to information. If you have a more transparent idea in how the judicial administrator should be forced to convey new laws directly to the student body or something like that, I'd be willing to discuss that with you further between this week and next week. As to my thought process with the ratification, the idea was that this document wouldn't just be another resolution, that it would be an independent, freestanding thing that requires a lot of collaboration between different community members. It is a student bill of rights, however, it would be nice that faculty would agree to a student bill of rights that talks about academic freedom and freedom in the classroom. So my thought process was, okay, so you have the student assembly. It's a student bill of rights. I guess you got to have the graduate student assembly. They're in. All right, you got those two, and then you got this academic stuff in there. Kind of makes sense, maybe the University Assembly and the Faculty Senate too. And then you look at stuff with harassment and other individuals and just discrimination in general, then you think, hey, employees should be included in this too. They're members of the community. So that was kind of how I spawned out from students, but I'd like to have this debate if you... What? Right.
Yeah, this is why I just, like, in terms of having them ratify us, the other companies don't need to see my ratify them because it's human rights students, right? And responsibility to do, which is also, you know, true. But, you know, I think that if we want to believe that these other companies ratify us, then we should be a community of civil rights. Like, everyone on our campus has a
right.
I'm going to do one thing here. Mark Simon.
Interesting, and I mean, I do say I do definitely want this to be on the web and the Dean of Students, the Office of Dean of Students webpage. Whether it's a quiz or not, that sounds like an interesting idea, and perhaps we could talk about this between this week and next week. But I'm not really sure. I don't remember taking, besides Alcohol EDU, I don't remember taking or having to take other types of quizzes and stuff. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thought is that this will be on everyone's pillow when they come to orientation, that this will be part of that packet, so they'll have the opportunity to see it. I don't know if a quiz is altogether necessary, though it does sound like a good idea for the future. Right. I understand.
And so, with that, you all have a week to sleep on this. Please do so. Make amendments to think about the document.
Yeah. I'd really like amendments to be thought out, not off the cuff. We have one meeting left. Send me an email.
And with that, I turn and wait for the next meeting.
Yeah, I'll send it to you right now.
Well, as a doc, too, because it's a lot easier to amend
okay.
things.
Right.
And just, like, put it
on. Got it. What's your email?
BNR24.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.